And joining us once again is Tom Gimbel. Tom, how are you today? Welcome to the show.
I am in recovery mode from the Bears game, John, but otherwise doing wonderful.
You know, I talked to Eric Zorn. By the way, Tom Gimbel's on the line, the job expert and founder of LaSalle Network. I talked to Eric Zorn, not about the Bears, but once you start talking about the Bears, and we did a little bit, it's hard to stop talking about that game. So my recommendation is we don't go down that road, but I hope you're okay.
I was actually there. My son lives in D.C., and so I was visiting him, and it was depressing, but I'm making a comeback.
Wow. You know, maybe there's a lesson to learn, though, from a business perspective, from an employer-employee perspective. That's your wheelhouse. I wonder what you would say, then, about the retention of the coach as for the Bears.
Well, I'll tell you exactly, John. I actually wrote a post on LinkedIn about it yesterday, and that I think that the tie-ins to business are really accurate, and from what I mean by that, is there's a lack of discipline on the team. And there were penalties on offense, defense, and special teams before you even get to the aspect of Tariq Stevenson and how he was jawing at the fans on the last play. And I think what it shows is teams tend to gravitate on what's allowed. And we all have weaknesses and strengths, but leadership tells you what's tolerated. And again and again and again, the coaching staff is tolerated poor performance and allows the team to regulate itself, at least what's been published in the newspapers and such. And so I think you're starting to see that play out. And when you have a leader that lacks the accountability to just say, you know what, we stunk it up real badly today, and instead says, a lot we can learn from, that gravitates and radiates throughout the organization. And so I think there's a lot of similarities to a company where if somebody on your team, whether you're in marketing or accounting or sales, and they continually make mistakes or they continually don't treat customers the right way, and you tolerate that, employees within the organization begin to lower their level of output and say, if there's no recourse for bad behavior or bad performance, why am I working so hard? And that is a real parallel, and you got to be careful.
I wonder where that starts then. Does that mean the owner gets a new GM? Does the GM get a new coach? Does the coach bench players? I wonder how that plays out.
Well, it really starts with who's going to take accountability, right? So it starts with the general manager. And if the general manager doesn't say to the coach, I didn't see the accountability from you, you didn't own it, then you start to have some problems there. The ownership has to look and say, did the GM call that, right? And so there's a level, there's a stair step of responsibility that has to happen. What we've seen time and time again, and I think this happens in companies all the time, John, is that the McCaskies, as owners, they value how people treat one another, the air quotes niceness of people, over the competency of winning and accomplishing goals.
Yeah,
I think we see this in corporate America all the time, that a lot of companies want really nice people who don't offend people ever, but that doesn't always result in more sales, more growth, better product results.
We certainly have
that.
We certainly have that on the South Side too. That's the description of the Reinsdorf regime at White Sox at Sox Park.
Correct. They want people who are going to play nice with others, who don't rankle upper management and ownership, and who are part of what they think is right versus being leaders in their own right. And that happens in companies all the time. You have people that are in the CYA mentality, cover your you-know-what, and rather than saying, I'm not afraid to speak up and say things, because great leaders are ones who are willing to speak up, but eventually the top person says, this is how it's going to be. You didn't sway my opinion, so we're going to do it my way. And good leaders then follow that. But you need people who are willing to speak up before they agree and don't agree just for the sake of keeping their job.
I think that's well put, and I like the timeliness of that. It's not why we called you today. Let's talk about this other topic next time, but give me your headline on this headline. The number one thing you can do to feel happier at work, according to an expert, is to find a friend. One good friend at work will really make a difference. Do you agree with that?
I do. I absolutely do think that. Now, is it number one or number two?
Number two.
I think you can debate that. But I think that if it's not in your top two things of having somebody at work that you really can confide in and have a friendship with, I think it makes life a lot better and a lot happier. And I've seen that at all levels, from executives down to entry level and everything in between. Is somebody, now, the key is you need a friend who's not going to let you be the complainer and the gossiper, who's going to call you out on that. That's a real work friend. But I do believe having somebody who's your brother or sister in arms is really important in the workplace to make you feel happier.
It's Tom Gimbel. Tom, we'll talk again next time, hopefully not about the Bears, but I appreciate your insight on that too, sir.
Absolutely, John. We can learn from everything. All skills are transferable. Appreciate you having me on.
Talk to Tom Fortino. This is the voice you hear Sunday mornings on WGN Radio at 7 a.m. with his This Week in Wealth show. It's actually the, I believe, Alpha Wealth Hour now, right? Tom Fortino is the founder and principal there. How are you, Tom? Welcome back.
Thanks. Good to be back, John.
Let's just do an overview of the markets. What are you feeling right now, Tom?
Well, I mean, again, we just continue to power ahead. Now, this week is going to be an interesting week. You're looking at five of the seven Mag 7 stocks coming out with earnings, starting with Alphabet or Google tonight. You know, so there's just so much data that's going to really. And these are big market drivers, so that's why this is so so important. You know, in addition to the jobs report on Friday, the PCE, the inflation indicator, so. Big week, big week.
Of course, I thought you were going to say this is a big week because of the election coming up. It sounds, though, like whatever the results of the election, the markets will notice it, but they're not going to wildly swing, according to that. Is that your read on it, too?
Well, here's what I would say about that. Well, of course, no one knows for sure, but sometimes the reactions can be an overreaction on the upside, an overreaction on the downside, and then ultimately it kind of stabilizes because reality sets in. And then if we know, you know, you've heard the adage so many times, it's uncertainty. Well, if there's certainty and people know what the policies are going to be, the companies and the market can adjust. So to a certain extent, of course, there's more to it than that, but certainly that's something that that once we have, and again, we may not know, I guess, next week. Who knows?
Yeah, well, it is Tuesday, we might not. My guess is we're not going to know Wednesday morning who the next president is. We might. I hope we do, but I would not be surprised if we weren't. I do remember when Donald Trump got elected, within hours, the market swung to the downside 600 points. Mm-hmm. And then it did recover. And I think a fair question, and one that I don't think we'll know on election day either, is whoever becomes president, will their policies favor our economy and markets in general? And I think both sides are making their argument that they will be better for the economy overall. It's easy to read into Donald Trump's tariff ideas and expect that would be bad for business and bad for the economy. I'm not inventing that. Smart people have said that. But again, I'm also hearing that it's probably not going to send the markets into a tumult or raise them up another 1,000 points.
Well, yeah. I mean, as far as part of that is you just don't know. I mean, you hear people making statements, and then they can change their policies somewhat when they get in there. In addition to that, we have to keep in mind there is a Senate and a House of Representatives. Yep. So, you know, technically we're supposed to have checks and balances. So depending on how those go, certainly can have a big impact on the way things go over and above just the presidential election. So we really have to keep an eye on that as well.
I think that notion has been much underreported. I'm glad you brought that up. Consumer confidence is up as we get closer to the election. I guess that goes hand in hand with the economy that just keeps powering on, huh?
Yeah. That was a, it was estimated to come in a lot lower. So that was a helpful number that came out, because I think you've made the comment before too. We've had this before that, you know, that the level of confidence, well, people are going to have a tendency to spend more maybe or be more active using. And in fact, you saw, I think, home builders rallied a little bit after getting beat up the past few days. So that was a reflection of that.
I also think the tail wags the dog on this a little bit. If we tell people good economic news, they might believe it's better. If we harp on inflation and the fact that prices are higher than they were 4 years ago, then they'll tend to believe the opposite. What do you think of that, Tom?
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, and there's been these discussions before where you can just talk yourself into some of these things. And we've seen a lot of that this year. You know, I guess there's been a lot of learning lessons from this year, you know, whether it was a soft landing, it was a hard landing, there was going to be five or six interest rates cuts, whether there's going to be one or two. I mean, we can't ever predict these things, so we always have to understand that and not have any one thing, you know, have us make decisions that are going to be many times to have a negative impact on our overall investments.
30-year fix, though, is back above 7, right? I don't know what to make of that.
Well, you know, the 10-year went down to 3.6. Again, this whole idea of we're going to cut rates. We have to keep in mind the bond market is a market. It's like the stock market. In fact, it's bigger than the stock market. There's buyers, there's sellers. And so when there's less sellers or people are looking for higher rates, the 10-year is up to 4.2. And I don't know if anyone predicted that. The argument is it going to go back down? And the 10-year has a big impact on mortgage rates. And so when you look at these credit markets or these bond markets, it's telling us something, I guess. It's telling us that there's different people's positions on this a little different. Some are saying, well, because the market's doing well. On the other hand, some are saying, well, because there's a fear of inflation, people want a higher rate on their bonds if they're going to buy them. So it's interesting. We'll see where that goes.
We'll give you time to talk about that Sunday, and you and I will visit again. Tom Fortino is the founder and principal at Alpha Wealth Group. You'll listen to him Sunday morning at 7 here on WGN Radio, and you can always access his services at alphawealthgroup.com. Nice to hear your voice, Tom. Thank you, sir.
Nice to hear you, Steve. Take care, John.
You betcha. Happy Halloween. John Williams here with Bobby Brown, the Wilmette-raised makeup artist and entrepreneur, I'm reading now, is coming home to celebrate her cosmetic line, Jones Road Beauty. They're having a open house, a block party. The Jones Road Block Party runs 12:30 to 2. That's going to be tomorrow, Wednesday, at the new store on North Damon, 1655 North Damon. Notably, it says here, there will be freebies, and she is in our studio. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
And welcome back to Chicago. Do you get this way much? This is kind of where you grew up, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I come to visit my family a bunch. I don't usually do all the work. And this week I'm doing a press tour. And I just left your sister TV station where I got to be in the makeup room that was once Bozo. Okay, I grew up here. I once went to the show. I watched Bozo. So full circle moment, and I have made it. Me and Bozo.
I don't know a lot about makeup, but I'm guessing that Bozo's overmade for your standards.
You know what? There's a reason they call it clown makeup.
Your niche in the cosmetic world is what?
Is, you know, the no makeup makeup. You know, I think I need makeup. I don't need it, but I like it. And I look better when I put some on, but I don't like wearing a ton. I don't like to look made up.
And did that make you an outlier when you first got into the business?
Oh, big time, big time. It was the 80s and the whole industry was completely different. And I just couldn't do what they were doing. I thought it looked bad.
You studied makeup though, right?
I did, theatrical makeup. You know.
So what made you think there was a market for your vision?
Well, I was a makeup artist before I even thought about doing, a product. I graduated, I waitressed for a year because I needed to pay my rent. Then I moved to New York and just started cold calling people. And I eventually put a portfolio together to become a makeup artist in the fashion industry. So I did makeup for magazines, fashion shows, and, you know, anyone that would hire me.
I wonder if that's like breaking into Broadway, though, in New York. It would seem to me like that would be the epicenter for that. And if you are not known and have a novel idea, was it hard to get any attention?
It was totally hard. What isn't hard? How'd you break in to do what you do? I mean, you know, it requires work and, you know, some disappointments and getting back at it.
Was there a break for you? Was there a moment where somebody said, yeah, you know, I think she's on to something?
You know, a few times. I mean, even, you know, when I was really, really new, I had makeup artists that would hire me to be their assistants. And the first time I did Saturday Night Live, this new TV show, I got to assist and work with some of them. That was really cool. And the first time someone hired me without an assistant to be the makeup artist for Glamour magazine was earth-shattering. I couldn't believe it. That was cool. And then I got to do a Vogue cover 7 years later. And then I got married and moved out of the city. And I said, I can't be in this fashion business anymore. And I met a chemist at a shoot. And he made me a lipstick. And that's how I started.
He made you a lipstick?
Yes. I told him that I always wanted to find a lipstick that looked like lips, that didn't smell bad, didn't look like my mother's lipstick. And he said, oh, I can make it for you.
I heard that while you thought you would sell maybe 100 in the first month, your product moved 100 times the first day.
Yes, that is true. We launched the company after I sold it out of my house for a year. We ended up getting into a department store because I met someone and I asked her what she did. And she said she's a cosmetics buyer at Bergdorf Goodman.
Okay, that was God.
Yeah, that was her. I've had a couple of those weird moments. I became the beauty editor of the Today Show because I met Jeff Zucker's grandmother at a book signing, and I was on the show 14 years.
And she said, oh, you should meet my grandson.
She did.
He's got this network.
He did.
Wow.
She did, and that's how it happened.
Wow. So the line did spectacularly well.
The first line, which was called Bobby Brown, which happens to be the name I was born with, and that did really well. My husband and I sold it after 4.5 years to Estee Lauder. I stayed 22 years an employee. And left 2016 with 4.5 years left of a non-compete. And the day my non-compete was up exactly 4 years ago, I launched Jones Road.
Was that hard to sit on the sidelines?
It wasn't easy, you know, watching the baby, my first baby that I was part of, kind of make all the mistakes and do all the wrong things. But, you know, that not my problem.
What were those?
Well, just they made decisions that I would have said that I can't believe anyone decided to do that.
Palette decisions?
Oh, yeah. Contour palettes. Like, I spent my life telling women you don't need to contour. So
what does that mean, contour?
Contour is where you take a palette and there or any kind of shadow, and they teach you how to change the shape of your face, change the shape of your nose, change everything. And I just never believed in that. I would like to enhance people's beauty, not try to change them into something else.
So what's the art of that then? Is it more flesh tones and natural colors?
It's colors that appear naturally in your skin. Yeah. I mean, flesh tones, we have 25 different pencils that women use on their skin. So there's 25 different options of skin color because there's a lot of different color skin out there.
Trying to think of who would run contour to contrast to that we know, like
the Kardashians
or Lady Gaga and some of these people who are fabulous,
right?
But aren't Bobby Brown.
Right. I mean, look, I've seen the Gaga with hardly any makeup, and I just love the way she looks.
Who best represents your vision then that I know in popular culture?
I mean, I've always been a fan of Jennifer Aniston. I just think she always looks polished and put together.
I think a lot of us are taking a mental snapshot of her, and she looks very attractive, and I can't remember her being overly made up.
No, never. Even on the red carpet, you know, this beautiful dress and not over jewelry. I mean, very classic.
But what do you say to people who aren't as pretty as Jennifer Aniston and think, I'd like to make myself up and look better?
You know what? You can't look like anyone else, so you might as well look like yourself. And it's amazing what you could do with makeup and a good blowout, a good manicure. There's so many things. And honestly, half of the battle is not what you look like, but it's what you feel you look like. It's about how you feel about yourself.
What are the mistakes then that women make?
They pick themselves apart and they shoot too many things into their face to try to look younger. And to me, it doesn't make you look younger. It just makes you look like you've shot things in your face.
Do other women pick women apart?
I think women pick themselves apart, and sometimes by picking other people apart, it's just a reflection of how you feel about yourself. My answer at 67 is I do my makeup in the morning, and I just don't look in the mirror that much. And that kind of works for me.
It's sort of like your bank account or your stock portfolio or your mutual fund, whatever it is you hope to retire on someday. If the market's down, don't look, is the advice I've heard.
Exactly. And you know what? I think aging is such a great thing. People are just so anti getting older. It's like, no, guys, it's great to get older. You might as well be healthy, be fit in your body, and just, you know, use makeup just to make yourself look better.
Talk to me about this new venture now.
Jones Road, it's 4 years, and it's done quite well. I mean, the first brand was in all department stores. We are not. We're mostly a direct-to-consumer brand.
Jones Road.
Jones Road.
That's the label.
Yep, that
is the label. Doesn't say Bobby Brown?
It does not. I sold my name.
How do you feel about that?
I feel great because we were able to send a lot of kids to college.
I saw the number. You got a lot of money for that name.
We did very well, and we sent a lot of kids to college.
But like you said, there goes your first baby, and maybe somebody now isn't raising that kid the way you want.
Right, and that's okay because honestly, if it turned into the company I wish it would have turned into, I probably would have been bummed. But, you know, so whatever.
But as a result then of the non-compete expiring, you're now able to compete against your own name.
I am, but it's not competing against anyone. I'm just doing what I love and what I believe in. It just happens to be doing extraordinarily well. Okay?
Touche. Yeah. But it's the same kind of products, right?
I'm glad we're not on TV.
I won't say what just did. Bobby Brown, I don't know you. I didn't know you would do that. Now I do. Okay, so... Then what are your main products? What are you selling now?
Well, what I really love is there's products that don't sit in your line. So there's moisturizers. We have this star product called Miracle Balm, which is basically a pot.
She's now holding up it to the microphone.
Stick your finger in it, and it gets the product activated. You put it on your hands. You put it on your skin. It gives you a glow. It gives you a tint. And even if you have no other makeup in your face, you look better.
It's what color would you describe that?
This one is called Dusty Rose.
Oh, I see. So there's various shades.
Yeah, there's 12 or 13 different colors. So, you know, being a creative person, I keep thinking of new things.
So that's Dusty Rose.
Yeah, that's Dusty Rose. But if you're new to Jones Road and you're able to go into the store and work with an artist and they could help you find the right color pencil to make under your eyes so you don't look tired, the right foundation so your skin looks better but not that you're wearing any makeup.
I want to ask you about that process in a minute. Bobby Brown is here. The store on Damon is having a block party from 12:30 to 2 tomorrow, 1655 North Damon. Our conversation continues in a minute. We've got more business news now on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Vortman Steel is breaking ground today for its first U.S.-based manufacturing and assembly plant and office. It's located in Monee on 27 acres and includes a 100,000-square-foot fabrication shop and 20,000 square feet of office space. It's located at 25715 South Ridgeland Avenue in Monee. Vortman is a global industrial manufacturers headquartered in the Netherlands. The village of Monee is 35 miles south of Chicago, also home to Amazon, Triton Manufacturing, and Whiting Corporation, among others. University of Chicago researchers may have found a functional cure for type 1 diabetes. UChicago Medicine researchers have successfully transplanted pancreatic islets into 3 patients with type 1 diabetes, and 2 of them achieved insulin independence. A third patient has decreased insulin use by about 60%. A director at the University of Chicago Transplant Institute tells Cranes the results are a step toward a functional cure for type 1 diabetes. The findings are being presented at an event today in Boston. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food, Steve Alexander.
Thank you, and yesterday we were talking with this woman.
Mitzi Baum, CEO, Stop Foodborne Illness.
It's a Chicago-based nationwide nonprofit that does just what its title says, and it was started by parents whose children were killed by E. coli in the 1993 Jack in the Box hamburger debacle. Their action and demands resulted in better safety standards for meat, but veggies, the apparent source of the McDonald's E. coli problem, are a much more difficult challenge. More about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. And here's another website you ought to know.
It's StopFoodborneIllness.org.
And as we have learned too often the hard way, it isn't just meat that can make us sick. Remember Odwalla apple juice in 1996? That same year, contaminated lettuce sickened more than 60 people here in Illinois and other states. Spinach in 2006, and cantaloupe and scallions and bean sprouts and many other veggies over the decades, and happening at many of your favorite chains, from Chipotle to Wendy's to Taco Bell to McDonald's.
E. coli can pop up in vegetables anytime, especially vegetables that aren't cooked.
It's a recurring nightmare for restaurants because while they can cook the E. coli out of meat, they cannot with fresh produce. And her message to restaurants and others in the food chain?
Food safety needs to be a core value of your business if you are manufacturing, producing, selling food to the public.
And a big part of that is so simple. hand washing. You know those signs in the restaurant restrooms that say employees must wash their hands before returning to work? Yeah, she says that goes for the rest of us too, preparing food at home.
Please wash your hands.
It can be more complicated than that, though. Sometimes the E. coli gets onto the veggies via contaminated irrigation water on the farm. But back to McDonald's and the people who are suffering.
We have resources on our website for individuals that are in crisis or trying to manage the impact of long-term consequences of surviving something this severe.
That website again.
StopFoodborneIllness.org.
On the food calendar, it's National Oatmeal Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Bobby Brown is in our studio, who went to school at New Trier.
New Trier West.
How long did you live in the Chicago area then?
I left right after college, so yeah. How old are you when you go to college? I don't know, 18?
19, 20, yeah. Depends. Yeah,
yes,
something like that. And eventually... landed her own business, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Brown. She's got a new store now, though. It's the Jones Road. Block party is 12:30 to 2. I guess there'll be a line down the block for this. It's 1655 North Damon tomorrow. You'll be making an appearance there?
I will be there. My artists are there, and we are giving everyone a mini miracle bomb, which of your choice. Or of my choice, depending. One of the two.
Will you actually be looking at people and assessing their...
I will.
Wow.
Me and Cheyenne. Yes,
what
Cheyenne
an honor
and I.
That would be to have Bobby Brown look at you and go, yeah, you should do this. You are set for life.
Yes.
Do you take that as... I'm teasing you a little bit, but
that's kind of true.
A kind of a responsibility.
Sure.
In a
it
way.
Is a responsibility. I mean, I love what I do, and I get to help people, you know, look and feel better.
What do you think about makeup for men or men's styling in general? I mean, you sell products to women. Do you have opinions about men?
Well, we make a gel bronzer that my dad uses, and he's 89.9 years old, and he uses it every day, even though he's having trouble getting it out of the container, so I got to tell him to put it upside down. But
a gel bronzer?
A gel bronzer, because he's very vain. He likes to look tan.
Oh, so that's a bronzer.
Yeah, it's very
colors
sheer.
Colors your skin a little bit.
Yeah, it's a gel. Yeah. So, and also, for me, I'm not big on makeup for men. I do like when men take care of their skin.
Where did I read? You got Mike Tyson to wear eye makeup.
No, I did not. I worked with Mike Tyson, but he basically said, you ain't touching me with that stuff. So... that's, yes. But I did, you know, the Rolling Stones and Keith, got to do his black smushy.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh, yeah, that was really fun. And they hired me a couple times because I seemed to have made him look healthy.
I don't want to talk about this more than a sentence or two, but the most famous made-up man in America right now is Donald Trump. Do you have any advice for him cosmetically?
I didn't hear that question.
any makeup advice for the former president?
There's something going on in here.
I said makeup advice. Okay.
There's something going on in this room.
I think that's a good answer. And then lastly, so the products that you have at this new store, just give me the laundry list real quick.
Well, I mean, we have a full line. We have skincare. We have all makeup. We have brushes. We have a perfume, a fragrance called Shower. You know why it's called Shower? Because you smell like you just got out of the shower. It doesn't smell like anything else except soap.
So kind of a minimalist approach.
Yes, it's pretty minimal. If you are someone that likes heavy contoured makeup, stay home. You won't like it.
Or a big smell.
Yes, yes. Or yes, no. You could have a smoky eye. You can have a red lip. You could do all of that, and you could do that with Jones Road. But the essence of the makeup makes you look better, but that you're not wearing artificial makeup.
Do you worry the people that are counseling your customers, they need to know then your mantra?
I don't worry. I take action. We train.
You train them.
I have trained one girl who trains them. And so we probably are looking for another couple people to help her because we have six stores right now.
In the U.S.
In the U.S., yeah. And we have one counter in Liberty in London.
So, oh, wow. And then is the plan to have 100 stores
in the country? No, we'll probably end up having about 20 or so. But we're really 95% of our business is online, direct to consumer. Like you could literally go on our website and... you know, we can help you find the colors digitally.
No kidding. I think this would be something. Of course, you can buy glasses online now where they assess your eye and your palate. So I guess you could do it. You prefer that?
I prefer it. I'm not someone that goes into stores that much. So I like doing things online. And you know, the great thing when you have a business that's online, you don't have anyone to tell you what to do or what not to do, and you own your consumer.
Bobby Brown, back in Chicago from New Jersey, right?
That's right.
Well, we're glad that you're in town, and I think lucky the ladies, I presume mostly ladies, that will be there tomorrow from 12:30 to 2, they might actually get you to help them out, plus the team. This is at the new Jones Road store. The block party is 12:30 to 2 in Chicago on North Damon. Tomorrow there will be freebies. Well, thanks for visiting with us today.
My pleasure. Ours. Really a pleasure.